Yes, this conference is being recorded.
So we would suggest that people use the mute feature unless you're talking, just so we get a cleaner recording.
Yeah, mute is star six, but yeah, be sure and unmute yourself if you want to be heard. So since we just started the recording, I'm just going to say again that structure we're thinking of here is one of asking, you know, what are some lessons learned from working with the Leadership Agility 360? And we'll start with the initial phase and then the debrief phase and then the coaching phase. And then we'll open it up for questions for anybody who wants to explore anything. So how about, has anybody had, now that I've sort of stalled for time for you, do you have any thoughts as to things that you've learned or that have stood out to you in using the instrument during this early phase, matching it up with people, introducing it, and communicating with feedback providers that you'd like to share with others in the group? It doesn't have to be a huge, big, profound thing, but just any tips that you might have that come to mind.
Also, any surprises you may have encountered.
This is Andy. I've actually introduced it to a client of mine. They're a company of about 60 people, and I was delighted at how receptive they were to the idea, and we're about to embark where the CEO and his left and right arm are about to go through it.
Great. You want to tell us anything about what do you think was the determining factor in them deciding to go with it?
Well, they're a startup, and they realize that they have a lot of gaps in their organization and in their leadership style. And this provided them with a different framework to looking at where their gaps are.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thanks.
Is there, Andy, any particular way that you describe the instrument or introduce the instrument that you think was instrumental in their receptivity?
Let me think about that, okay?
Oh, yeah, sure. So, and meanwhile, other people who want to share stuff can, and Andy can jump back in. One thing that I thought I would mention is that and some of you may already be quite familiar with this, and some of you may not. This is more directed to those of you who have not yet done your two certification deliveries. But, you know, some people, of course, are doing it just the way Andy is. Many people are, you know, they're using it with actual paying clients, which is a great way to do it. Other people have decided for one reason or another that they would like to do it as a pro bono or just, you know, charge the individual for the price of the instrument. Of course, the first instrument is free for you, so it's really just that second person you'd be doing that with. Or barter something or, you know, do it with someone who you already know in some way that would just be receptive to trying this out and letting you try it out. So I don't mean to imply by any means that you should do it the second way, but just that's an option. If you feel like, gee, I haven't been able to get somebody to pay for this yet, but I'd really like to get the experience under my belt so that, you know, I can speak from experience and as I share it with other people. That's just something I've learned in doing a lot of the certification reviews.
This is Jerry. I would agree with you. After having done a couple of people,
mm-hmm.
I got so excited, maybe too excited, but I was going to big companies like GlaxoSmithKline, KS and IBM and over in Dubai, Do, which is the equivalent of AT&T over here.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little disappointed. Most of these big companies said, we already have our internal 360, or they have developed their own 360, or they have some big, mm-hmm. big worldwide company that they already have contracted with and spend a lot of money. And mm-hmm. I know some of them have fallen, like mm-hmm. the company over in Dubai, equivalent of our AT&T, Do, for their big telecommunication company. They said the people came in, gave the 360, gave them one little mini workshop about, okay, now just, and they just kind of dropped the ball. And these people said they spent probably, I don't know if it was $1 million or $1 million dirham, it was a lot of money.
Wow.
And they, once they did the 360 and got a little workshop on, okay, managers, now use this to, they never gave them the coaching or whatever they needed
mm-hmm.
to go. And so that's what I'm trying to do now, is say without the follow-up coaching, the 360 has very limited factors. And so I was trying to think of how to get them to say, well, maybe select a group of those people and do this 360 and compare
mm-hmm.
it to the results you get with the results you got with the other one, especially
mm-hmm.
with the follow-up
yeah.
coaching.
Yeah, so
yeah.
frame it as a pilot, essentially.
Yes.
So that they can try out on a small scale and see what the value is. Or sometimes it's
right.
just get a couple of people to do it who are in key positions, that sort of thing. Well, you know, what you're saying is certainly, I mean, there certainly are lots of companies that have their own internal 360s, and that's, you know, as you're saying, more likely to be the case if it's a large company.
A really big one, yeah.
Yeah. And at the same time, you know, a number of people have done the Leadership Agility 360s in large companies. And I think, and even sometimes not just with you know, several individuals, but with groups of people, usually it's, I think most cases it's been, for large companies, it's been high potential managers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there usually has to be some reason that they feel like that this would complement the normal 360, or that there's a special set of needs that a particular group of managers have that you know, that this would be a good match for, and that certainly has happened. I mean, we had a group at the last workshop where I think there were, well, some of you are on the call. You know, I think there were maybe six of you at a large financial services company using it, I believe, for a high potential program, sort of for the reasons I was just describing. So, you know, it's certainly doable, but, you know, yeah, don't be surprised if a company already has a 360 that they're, you know, that they've worked out for their different strata in the
My best bet was to try to get a group of say a department or a sub department and say, well, why don't you just get
mm-hmm.
six or eight of your group and let's because they don't have the concept of moving through levels. They know that there's different management
mm-hmm.
styles and different capabilities.
Right.
They don't have the basic framework that you have that of the moving through levels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that
yeah,
can
so
be
there
very
are two
appealing.
Things. Just two things I wanted to add. One is that, just as you found, Jerry, a lot of companies have their own 360s, and probably only some percentage, and we don't know what that percentage is actually happy with what they have.
Right. Yeah.
And we hear a lot mm-hmm. of comments these days about leadership development, quote, not working, whatever that means.
Yeah, and I think you put your finger on a related important point, Jerry, which is that, I mean, what you're offering is not just the instrument; it's the
right.
whole process that surrounds it, and your expertise as a seasoned coach, and your, you know, ability to work in depth with people. So I think that all, you know, I think once a company has been kind of burned in the way that
yes.
you're describing this company was, maybe they're a little more receptive to investing a little bit more in the coaching side of it.
Right. And another angle is that, you know, we know that Cambria does a lot of assessment, as you may know, And much of it is at the top of big companies, some of it for succession planning, for instance. And they've found that it's very useful to introduce the concept of agility as a complementary concept to be aware of in addition to whatever the company competency model is. Because it's not quite the same as one of the other competencies, although some companies do include it by name and don't have a way of measuring it. But it's something that, in conjunction with the other assessments, can add an important dimension that won't be captured otherwise. So explore that.
George Klimt, is one of the principals at Cambria, has done a fair amount of field work on this, and he's concluded that two individual managers can score the same on a company's 360 and yet be at different agility levels.
Yes.
That's a very meaningful additional distinction. The way he puts it is that the agility level affects how a person deploys the competencies that they have as traditionally competencies as traditionally conceived. So that's another framing that people might want to consider, you know, if this kind of conversation comes up.
He calls it the secret juice.
Yeah. Well, I'm such a fan of Ken Wilber. I don't scare them away with all of that, but I still let them know that the level the manager is at literally determines the world of view, how they look out at the world, how they interpret the exact same data and exact same situation and or whatever, as you point out in your book and in the training, how they actually see that situation is going to vary depending on what level they're looking at it through.
Bill, this is Marcel.
Can you repeat that again? You said the example you gave was that two leaders can have the same something, and I didn't catch the rest of it. I just wanted to hear that again.
George was saying that there are instances he's seen where two managers would score the same on a traditional or a company-designed 360. They might be both 4.8 or whatever the number is.
Right.
But that in running a parallel leadership agility 360 with them, because he's done this a number of times, he's found that the agility level can vary. And because these are real intensive executive assessments that he does that include both types of instruments and then in-depth 360 interviews. And so he gets to know the individuals quite well. And what he's concluded from this sort of the whole data set is that quite often the agility level can be different, and that if somebody has greater agility, what that amounts to is that they are more adept, more agile, if you will, in deploying, using the competencies that they've been assessed on through the traditional 360.
Thanks, Bill. Appreciate you repeating that.
Yeah, sure. So I just want to create space are there others who want to share any lessons learned or thoughts about this early phase, pre-debrief phase of working with the instrument? If not, there's one thing I wanted to mention, because this is something that we were pleased to see that the discussion threads on the LA 360 Coach group site have been used more frequently lately. And one of the topics that came up was about communicating with feedback providers. What's the best way to do that? Now, there's a whole sort of recommended approach in terms of verbal feedback or verbal requesting in person or on the phone that is in the manual. So I'm not going to repeat that. You can look that up. But and then Cambria sends its own sort of very basic invitation out automatically when people are listed as feedback providers. But what you'll see in those discussion threads, if you go onto that site, are some additional emails that LA360 coaches have put together to help their clients communicate in a more personal way with the people they're inviting, and to include the types of things that are recommended in the manual, and sort of make it more of a personal invitation. Let the person know, you know, here's why I wanted to especially invite you, and things like that. So be sure and look those up if you're interested in that kind of thing. Okay, how about, let's move on to the debrief phrase.
Could I just say one other thing?
Sure.
It would be interesting to hear anybody's thoughts on this as well. The invitation and the involvement of raters, of course, is another opportunity for education and spreading the framework ideas. And I know we've heard from others that often the raters, just the process of the rating, is itself sort of provocative and educational. And some of them have a way to talk about that with somebody else, and some of them don't. So you might sort of be mindful of that, and if there is an opportunity with your client to explore how to answer questions that people have, that would be a good thing to do. It might, at the very least, be a good thing to send those people copies of the white paper, and that could be done either before or after they do the ratings, just to give them something.
Also, Andy, I wanted to just come back to you. If you wanted, did you want to add anything about how you had presented the LA360, or not?
Well, I'll see if I can do this quickly. The way I present it, the company is in a rapid growth, sort of a startup mode. I mean, it's 5 years old, but they're still very young and growing very quickly, and so it was a way of the CEO was able to wrap his mind around what the organization needs in terms of leadership, agility, and in order to double their plan is to double their size in the next 18 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it was something that it was tangible. It was easy for him to understand it. I basically explained it the way that you explained it to us in the workshop, that you know, the three levels, we progress through them, et cetera, et cetera. And it stuck. It stuck, and he said, I like it. I sent him the article, the first article that you
mm-hmm.
had provided us with, and he said, I like it, I want to do it, and I want my left and my right arm people to do it as well.
Great.
Maybe I got lucky. Maybe I won the lotto.
Nice work. No. It sounds like you were really tuned in to his needs and the kind of business results he wanted, and that you helped him make the connection between the two.
Hope so.
Yeah. Okay.
Hi,
so,
and so this
yes.
is Ingrid from Ottawa, and
yes.
a very similar experience with a small technology company.
Mm-hmm.
And what I feel about orientation now is that absolutely, if there's any way for us to do more education first and foremost in presenting this, because I guess a lot of people are very used to 360s, and there's a lot of them out there.
Mm-hmm.
To which I don't have a great deal of experience. This one is really different, I can tell.
Yep.
And the feedback for me was some of the language and the way that it was presenting the report was just new enough to both, you know, the people receiving the feedback and to the raters, that there is the potential for them to get a little bit, you know, just uncertain about it. That
mm-hmm.
was the first reaction that I received from folks. So now I know in my heart, and I know that I would take a stand for more orientation, like let folks know we need to talk about this first. We need to prepare for, you know, what this is going to be like and what it's going to deliver.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
mm-hmm.
I just feel stronger about that. I will
mm-hmm.
insist on that.
Mm-hmm.
I will insist on taking my space and checking in with them around what it's going to be about and what to expect, because ultimately I'm a professional coach. I know that it's about the coaching at the end of it.
Mm-hmm.
So now I can see that I want to prepare people for the fact that, you know, you need to be prepared that this is going to be about coaching afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Ingrid, that reminds me of something. I think those are great points. We had another coach who just recently communicated with me and said, you know, I've been doing the LA 360 with these groups of high-potential managers, and we're doing another whole cohort this year, and it's really going great. But here's this experience I had early on, which was that about three feedback providers, and of course this is out of dozens and dozens, but, you know, three feedback providers the first time around said, you know, I don't really get what this is, how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And what she found was that by communicating to them, this is a non-traditional 360, so it's a little bit more, requires a little more reflection than your usual 360. So make sure and read the instructions carefully.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever she said that, everything cleared up for people. And so as a result, we have a request into Cambria now so that the emails that go out to feedback providers include that statement.
Yeah.
Which, of course, doesn't guarantee or take the place of what you're saying. But
no, but it's helpful.
I thought it was an interesting similar point.
And I think it's about, it's so where you ask folks to think about an exact example of where they've witnessed their leader or where they've witnessed the person that they're giving feedback on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, that's a really important place for them to feel completely open to really think about the example. And yet they're having to come up with the example on their own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so helping them to understand, like take the time and really think of the example is,
mm-hmm.
or maybe there could be, you know, more examples that we could give them. But this language is definitely a bridging language. I'm not sure if I'll be able to describe this properly, but from your deep research and, you know, in terms of levels, taking people into new levels and new language, this is the best language I've seen that can help people to open up to this deep reflection, but it's still new.
Mm-hmm.
It's still new language to what they're used to. So as consultants, as professionals, taking our, rather than just, like I was just so excited to go in and get someone to take part and let's just do it, yeah, 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 and they were completely open and they want to do it. And then some of the language kind of just made them feel like, oh, okay, this is way more reflective, or I need to be way more, you know, something else than what they were. So I just see that at this point as, oh, okay, so I deserve and they deserve more education up front. So, but
right.
without leading them, I realize we can't lead
yeah.
them. But
right, right.
Yeah.
So
you want to be aware that without preparation, it can be a little bit unsettling, maybe slightly intimidating if it's, you know, they're not used to
mm-hmm.
Doing this kind of reflective feedback.
Exactly.
And so with some preparation, it can just be better for them and for the person receiving the feedback.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to put it in perspective, good. I mean, I would say, I mean, at least from the feedback we've received, that it's a pretty small number of people who have felt kind of like, ooh, you know, this is more reflection than I had in mind.
Right.
So I wouldn't want to convey that that's the norm, but you know, but I think there's enough, even a small percentage is enough to want to make it make sense to pay attention to this and to say things about it and set it up so that everybody can have a smooth experience. A sort of related point is that we found out from the early on research was that people said things like, You know, this makes you think more than most 360s I've used as a feedback provider.
Yeah, we've heard that a lot.
And they really meant that in a good sense.
Mm-hmm.
And that in that sense, it takes more time, but in fact that it's short. It's only 24 items. Actually, when we did the timing on it and so on, we feel pretty confident that we can say it takes about 30 minutes to do. So it's not that it really winds up taking longer, but it does take more thought. And,
right.
Anything anybody wants to share about the other two phases, the debrief goal setting phase or the actual coaching? Any sort of lessons learned or things that just sort of stand out to you as, hey, I'd just like to share this.
Any aha's about the debrief?
There may,
and
may
the
be
action
people
planning.
Who are, think they're speaking right now, but they're actually muted. make sure you're not muted if you're trying to speak.
Right.
While people are thinking, I just wanted to comment on the some of the most valuable parts. As much as and people really appreciated the 360, it really was revealing. But it was the comments from the stakeholders, comments from the reports, comments from the actual part of it, the wording that the different people would use when giving their comments. I think those gave real insight into how do other people see me,
mm-hmm.
and they were much more concrete examples where the person could say, okay, rather than just I see this capability or this competency and whatever, they really got to. Okay, when I was at this meeting and I did this and I did this, they saw that as just. I found those extremely valuable, especially in the mm-hmm. sitting down with them in the debriefing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a great point, Jerry. You know, we've gotten some feedback. I mean, my experience in doing 360s, I've probably done a half dozen different types before we designed this one, was that the written feedback was probably the most valuable in any 360, and that the clients I work with tended to just sort of skip over the quantitative stuff and go right to the written comments because that's really what they wanted to see. What we've gotten some feedback recently that what people really like about the written comments on this instrument is the fact that they're divided into these three different arenas.
Yes.
Because that seems to do what you're saying, which is it tends to make the feedback more concrete and specific than it is if you're just sort of throwing out general comments. So that's, you know, that's also something that I think if you're looking to describe maybe how this is a little bit different than some other instruments, that's something that's probably worth mentioning.
This is Eileen.
Hi, Eileen.
Hi. A question. I've done three debriefs now, and in all three cases, we found ourselves sort of wondering when there was an outlier, you know, what particular example they were thinking about. You know, I tried to reframe it that it's a data point and it's based on this example and we're going to make it information and, you know, all that good stuff. But I was just wondering, or I've forgotten, what was the thinking about not having people give a little bit of the gist of the situation that they're actually scoring?
Oh, well, let me go back to when you say an outlier, are you talking about in the quantitative section or in the written feedback? Talking about the quantitative?
In the quantitative,
like somebody saying, well, this person is more like they check off the expert box instead of the.
Yeah, and they're a catalyst everywhere else, let's
say. And every, Well, I think one thing I'd want to clarify about that example that we were asking people to hold in mind is that the way the instructions are stated, and this is another reason to say, you know, read the instructions carefully, is that people are not being asked to just think of an example and score the example. They're being asked to think of a representative example that represents how they are in general.
Okay.
That's, you know, so they are giving, assuming they're reading the directions, which I think most people are, they are saying how they see this person in general. And, it's you know, it's tricky when I think clients do tend to, if they get one low score and 10 high scores, they tend to focus on the one low score.
Sure.
And want to know, it sort of eats at them a bit. Ideally, I would say 360s are a springboard into more honest conversations in the workplace. But it's hard to, if it's your boss, which is the one that people tend to be the most concerned about, then, you know, one of the reasons that we recommend that conversation between the two debrief meetings with the boss is to clarify anything like that. You know.
Right. Yeah, it was easy if it was the manager because they could go.
You know who that is.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but if it's one direct report or one stakeholder, it's hard to know. And I don't know that there's – I haven't seen a 360 that kind of gives you – that both maintains anonymity and, allows the person to know from the feedback report exactly – why the person, you know, scored it that way.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
This is Rich Douglas. I wanted to offer a thought about that.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that even if your center of gravity is a later stage, under certain circumstances or in certain situations, you can access an earlier stage. So it could very well be the respondent saw that person behave in a way that was at an earlier stage, say at an expert stage, as opposed to a catalyst stage, under a certain circumstance. And the other thought that I'd like to leave us with is to remember that, you know, these when we start talking about stage and about what you know, earlier stage or later stage, the data points are an array, a distribution, if you will, and they're not all going to be there. What we like to look at, though, is, you know, where is the center of that activity? Where does it mostly occur? And I think you can help somebody with an outlier that way by saying, you know, in that circumstance, in that time, this person observed, you know, your performance at an expert stage as opposed to, say, an achiever stage. And then that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Good point. Thank you. Yeah.
So anything, let's kind of, I mean, we have about 30 more minutes on the call, so we can kind of go wherever we want to. We can continue to talk about different phases of the working with the instrument or the coaching that follows it, or we can also just, let's just open it up to any questions or comments or anything anybody would like to share on the call.
Well, it's Ingrid again, and I don't have something to take us in a different direction at this point, but if there's some time that would be appropriate, I think it'd be great to hear from Bill and Debbie, like, just update us on your latest experiences, your vision, your concerns, your questions, you know, like, maybe give us 5 minutes of that update at some point, if that seems relevant.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's give other
Oh yeah, no, only just if it makes sense at the end of session.
Yeah.
We'd be happy to do that at some point.
Hi, this is Bob Elliott.
Hey, Bob.
Hi, Debbie. I want to go back to the first conversation around the 360, and I think my experience is an important point here is that in many ways we aren't just selling a 360, and I think using 360 is kind of a trap. A lot of clients I work with have used other 360s, or they have an in-house 360. And I think it was you, Bill, that said there's some disappointment in that. My experience also is that most people aren't real excited when they hear 360.
Mm-hmm.
And when I talk about 360, 9 times out of 10, the first thing they come back with is, oh, we already have one of those. One of those. You know, and I say in my head, I'm saying, no, you don't have one of these. This is not even close. And I was thinking about it as everyone was speaking, and you know, it's kind of like an MRI compared to an X-ray.
Mm.
You know, they'll send you off for an X-ray pretty easy because it's fairly inexpensive compared to some of the other tests like an MRI. But, of course, an MRI, I don't know, it costs 3 times as much, but it gives you 10 times as much data. And, it really prepares the referring physician to come up with a better diagnosis for the person. And, you know, for me, that's really what I'm selling is an MRI. And so after listening to this conversation, I think I'm going to stop saying, I have a new 360 I'd like to talk to you about. I'm not even going to mention 360. I think it's, you know, if we look at it from a bigger picture, we're really selling kind of a process. We're selling a developmental process.
Mm-hmm.
And we happen to use this multi-rate of feedback instrument at some point in the process.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very, very interesting observation and conclusion also. And I like your analogy, the MRI versus the X-ray.
Yeah.
I mean, has anybody else experimented with using sort of framing the a potential engagement or intervention as something other than the 360 or something that doesn't
broader
focus
than
on the 360?
Yeah, Bob, as you say that, it's Ingrid again, and that's absolutely where I feel the energy because I'm looking at the compass right now. And every one of us has a potential to develop in either context setting or stakeholder or creative agility or self-leadership. That is a fact. We each of us could choose to move forward. I like what you're saying that really this is about where do you want to go? Do you want to develop? Getting that confirmed first. 360 will provide the data it provides, and my client will also ultimately know and start seeing where they want to develop.
Yeah.
And between the feedback we get from 360 and what we're dealing with the client right then and there around how they want to further develop, I kind of really like that approach.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When I do start speaking about it, when I can get them off of what they think the 360 is, you know, I always tell them that when I say the word development, I always tell them the definition that I like, and that's if you look up development, one of the definitions is to unfold something. So that for me, this process is really working with a leader or a manager to really unfold them in a way that they get to whatever that next place is. And you know, and then there's more unfolding to do. This isn't like the end, but it's a kind of an unfolding process.
Mhm. Mhm.
Yeah,
nice.
That's great.
I can see some nice visuals going with that.
Mhm.
Mhm.
Yeah, and this is Charlotte, and I really, you know, to add to what folks are saying, I liked what you said, Bill, about how the leadership agility model is really about how people are performing those competencies. So I could see the leadership agility assessment as an add-on to other types of competency-based 360s.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
even organizations that have their own 360, this is so different, and this takes them to a different place, and particularly around leaders who are in the midst of implementing a change project process and really want to look at how they're doing that. And it's
mm-hmm.
very different from a competency-based 360. So I could almost see it as an add-on. And I like
yeah.
the idea of not calling it a 360, but calling it a kind of a deeper look, assessment that takes them on a deeper journey.
Mm. Like a
mm-hmm.
developmental assessment.
Yeah, a developmental assessment. That's exactly right.
Mhm. Yeah, interesting. Well, this will be an interesting line. Perhaps we could continue this particular line of conversation on the group site, and as people come up with additional language that you're trying or thinking of trying, do share it with us. That would be great. Yeah. I'm curious, have any of you in talking with clients or prospective clients, do you find that many of them are using agility language? Are they talking about agility, or does that term resonate with them as something that their company needs?
It's Ingrid, and agile development is definitely established in the technology sector, in the development world. So,
right, very much in the technology, in the software development world. And
yeah.
We're hearing a lot about that.
Yeah, they are coming together and looking for new ways to harness their brainstorming and their problem solving and their, you know, figuring out what's right, what's best. And
mm-hmm.
they are coming to this way. And I think they're one of the pioneers of labeling it agile.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is, I mean, for anyone who's working with or maybe working with technology companies or software development departments or anything like this, the agile software movement was founded around 2001. Something called the Agile Manifesto. And it was a group of people getting together that had developed some new methodologies for developing software that really has a lot more, uses a lot of principles that come out of, some of it comes out of Japanese management, some of it is just very resonant with organization development perspective, and it requires... there's a set of practices that are associated with, quote, with Agile. And those practices, from our perspective, we would probably say they require a higher level of agility than the traditional software development project management practices do. And they've sort of backed into the whole issue of, well, then what is Agile leadership?
Mm.
And I was invited to a think tank in December with about a dozen agilists thinking about the future of the movement, and where they are right now is that it's really caught on. They do these things called agile adoptions, where they have multiple teams in an organization that are using these methods, but they're finding that they're reaching a kind of a ceiling because it's a kind of a bottom level intervention,
mm-hmm.
and you know the middle and the top aren't acting differently, and they sort of run into that ceiling. And they're also beginning to think more broadly about, well, what would organizational agility look like, and they have some of their own concepts of agile leadership, but they mainly mean agile leaders are people who use agile practices, so they don't have as rich a perspective. I was just presenting last week to Agile Boston, and there seems to be a lot of interest in what leadership agility can bring to Agile. Somebody said, it's like you're bringing agility to Agile. So I'm just mentioning that because you may want to be have your radar out for that, and it may provide openings, receptivity to the leadership agility perspective and the developmental process that we've been talking about in the assessment and all that.
Yeah, sounds like, Bill, if you could get to the developers, to the wonderful geeks of the world, and they and they could have a voice around what they command from leadership.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was really striking to be in the room with this with particular group of a dozen people who were kind of at, you know, they're not the people at the forefront of the movement, but they're, you know, they're pretty influential. They think so much like organization development people. And there would be so much at home in with leadership agility or with this conversation that we're having or with.
Mm-hmm.
I was really struck. It's like, wow, these technology people, at least this little vanguard of them, is really taking a new, you know, more highly developed approach to leadership
mm-hmm.
and organizations into the world. And
well, and some of them really do talk transformation. They talk the language of transformation anyway.
Mm-hmm. But they sort of assume that if you're doing their practices, you're doing transformation. But which is, you know, it's very powerful. I mean, there's a lot of examples of I mean, it's not only do things move much faster, but people are much more satisfied. So it has a real human dimension to it. And, you know, it may not be the sort of thing we expect to come out of IT, but yes.
Well, this is Steve. I'm really intrigued at this part of the conversation right now. And I really appreciate, you know, you're having sort of ventured into their space.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked on the margins of some Agile projects, and the thing that I'm struck by so much about it is the high demand for both collaborative work, a kind of letting go of sort of authority from the center. You know, that people really need, because, you know, I mean, the very notion of you pick up project off a board, basically. So, you know, what have I got time for? What am I interested in? You know, the kind of methodologies they use, which are really very kind of almost open system, and you know, there's just a lot of application of principles and practices that we might attribute to if you sort of capture them in a mindset that comes very close to what I'll think of as a catalyst leader. You know, where they're really empowering others, they're really enabling other people to do it. There's a kind of a perspective that says, look, no one of us knows what all of us can know, and really creating processes for that engagement and that dialogue, and, you know, the people making choices, and you know, when they get into dead ends, they simply put the project back on the board. You know, it's like I can't go any farther with this, and they replace it, and someone else picks it up and goes with it. So it's very intriguing, and I'd be interested in, you know, from the 360 perspective, seems like taking it to the next level of leadership. You know, you're talking about the middle managers and the executives who have groups of people who might be doing Agile work, Agile software development, sort of how their thinking is. Because I can imagine at times they start to feel a little freaked out because there's so little visible control of what's going on.
That's right. And I think they may also, we were at an event just last week where Bill was talking, and one of the points that was made that resonated with people, a lot of people there, was, you know, the teams become very self-sufficient, and very often their attitude and sometimes their messaging to the leaders above them in the organization is, in effect, we don't need you. We're doing it ourselves. Thank you very much. when actually they are needed, but they're needed to be leading in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And so typically the folks at the team level don't have a language for that, for what the alternative kind of leadership might be that the folks they're reporting to right, exhibit. And they're wanting the same kind of ethic, the same kind of collaboration to permeate through the organization, and they can see how it could really be beneficial. But without having some kind of concept of leadership and how to talk about it, they often, you know, feel there's sort of a roadblock there. So we're thinking that there are a lot of opportunities right there in that space, like what you're pointing to, Steve.
Yeah, I think often the message to those middle managers is here's what you stop doing what you used to do, which is, you know, in a sense is part of what they need to do, but it doesn't tell them what the new exciting empowered middle management role is that they could be playing.
Yeah,
and it sort of equates there's a certain set of project management practices that you were describing. That's what people are bought into who are into Agile, and so they don't have the more differentiated set of concepts about, well, how would a middle manager lead their team and lead change and have pivotal conversations and all of that. So I think there is, there's a real opportunity for the leadership agility perspective and the different methods, including the 360, to be something that could fill that void.
What comes to mind is the leadership agility is actually, to use a crossover metaphor, it is in such an advance, it's so far advanced, it's in, like, say, it's almost like the catalyst of leadership concepts. And some of the companies, especially in the Emirates, they're very, you're just out of the tribal stage, basically, and very patriarchal. The way I think of the U.S. about 40 years ago, when there were a lot of very top-down, and it's still there today, but I mean, it was much more heavily loaded that way 20, 30, 40 years ago. So they recognize that if they don't change their leadership style and they keep doing the expert stage over and over and over, they're simply not going to be able to, if they're not agile, they're not going to survive in this modern world. So when the languaging, because I'm referring to Debbie talking about what languaging, I realize they recognize this is exactly what they want and need, and if they don't, even these big giant companies are really doomed. And yet it's like they are learning a brand new language. The whole concepts that are being introduced, I'm getting repeatedly, that's exactly what we want. But of course, exactly what they want is exactly what is resisted the most, because this is the culture they're brought up in. This is the males are the dominant, and so the companies, which are run by the heads of families and male, and so it's a little bit harder for them to, even though they know this is exactly what they need, getting the languaging, I almost have to translate into their language, so to speak.
Yeah, well,
go back in time a little bit and talk more in the expert stage, and then move them a little bit more slowly to the next levels.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I think, you know, respecting where people are, whether it's their culture or their sort of the culture's dominant developmental orientation,
mm-hmm.
whatever. I think that's such an important part of this approach, what do you call it during NLP, matching or something?
Yes,
You connect with
cultural
them where
rapport,
they are, and then
you,
what's it called, match and lead or something? Match.
Yeah, first it's cultural rapport. First, into their worldview and their culture, and then only gradually lead them to, not to get rid of that, but to
mm-hmm.
enrich it, add to that rather than try to take away from that or change it.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think that's great.
Which is sort of the same thing we're talking about with leadership here.
Yes,
right.
Enrich it.
Enrich it, right. We're not talking about abandoning, but, you know, enriching.
Adding on to, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is important, that we're not trying to replace,
mm-hmm.
We're building on top of.
Mm-hmm. I think that can help with the potential resistance, or whatever you want to call it, fear
mm-hmm.
that people could have
mm-hmm.
of losing something.
Right. Honor and appreciate what is and build on it.
So is there anybody that's been having a tangential thought or something that didn't quite fit into this conversation, but you'd like to kind of get it in before we wrap up the call at some point?
You know, I'm curious, since Jerry was just talking about culture, if anybody else on the call has had an experience introducing this framework in a culture that, you know, maybe was not totally simpatico, and you know, any work that you've done in that realm that was useful.
You're referring to corporate culture?
Well, it could be corporate culture, or it could be the culture in which the corporation is embedded.
Okay.
Either one.
Margaret, I don't want to put you on the spot, but I immediately thought of you when Debbie asked that question, because I know you're doing a lot of cross-cultural work. Are you there? Are you still on the call? I don't know, maybe she's not. Okay.
No.
Well, is there anyone who'd like to share anything, experience, wonderful or otherwise, that you've had working with this in a different culture?
This is Bryna.
Hi,
Bryna. Hi. I'm sort of shifting conversation now. I think I sent Debbie an email, you know, with a question about what research, if any, have you all done, or do you know of anybody that's done anything with, you know, looking at the different generations and how they fall on the leadership agility, profile.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any information about that, or can you point me in the direction? I had a conversation with someone about that, and I said I didn't know, I would ask you. But, you know, we're working with young millennials and high potentials, maybe Gen X and Gen Y, both, and trying to compare them with some of the boomers and, you know, other generations, and trying to see what difference there are in terms of how they score on the survey, on the 360.
Mm-hmm. What a great question.
So when you say you're trying to find that out, have you done any 360s that or a sufficient number that you can actually see any patterns, or?
No.
Do you have a hypothesis?
No, I don't. I don't. I'm really curious. I mean, I'm wondering, I guess I'm wondering about the millennials and whether or not they tend to be more expert level, or, I mean, or are they, you know, do they generally tend to be more achiever level?
Well, Bryna, I mean, all I can offer is a hypothesis.
Uh-huh.
Because
I'm not aware of
any research that's been done on this. It would be fascinating to read about research done
uh-huh.
on this.
Although, Bill, didn't in the initial validation study, didn't George look for age differences?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not really
I think
sure.
so. We can, you know, we can check
well,
with
right.
him on that.
I think he did find, at least in the sample that was studied, I don't think they found, I think it was probably the only demographic category where there was a slight correlation of difference in agility level. And I believe it was that the most experienced managers on average tended to be just very slightly more agile.
Okay, but do
but,
we
but
know
that,
if they were what we consider Gen Y or Gen X? Or are they more baby boomers?
Well, what I'm saying, I mean, by the very most, I mean the oldest. It was based on age.
Oh, okay. All right. So.
Sorry, I should have said based on age. So that I don't believe that showed any difference. We can go back and look at that. I think that would be interesting to look at. But it's on. There's something on the LA 360 Coach website,
uh-huh.
group site called in the marketing folder, in the filing cabinet, in the under share, which is called the validation manual.
Okay.
And that has a page that shows the results of the study, including age. So we can all look
all
it
right,
up there
and
after
that.
The call and see what it says. But I think it's pretty. I don't think there's much differentiation shown there.
What's your hypothesis, Bill?
My hypothesis would be consistent with that finding, which is that the differences in the generations are more akin to differences in cultures than to developmental differences. And so that, I mean, when you hear things like, well, millennials or whoever it is, because I'm not an expert on this topic by any means, are more like to work in teams more than people of my generation. I always want to know, what does that mean? I mean, because people will say, well, so then that's more collaborative and that's more like a catalyst and that's more like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well, you know, what does that really mean? And does that mean that if you gave them a Leadership Agility 360 and you broke it down into these specific behaviors that you would actually see a qualitative difference in their behavior in these areas? Because, I mean, there are people who just in terms of personality type like teams more and people who don't. And it has
right.
nothing to do with their developmental stage or their agility level. So that would be my hypothesis, but it's a, you know, anecdotally tested at best.
So can you clarify, when you say differences in culture rather than in agility levels, how are you defining culture again?
Well, just as we would for different, you know, that there's a different culture in the Middle East than there's a different, you know, culture in the U.S. And then you have, of course, different subcultures in the U.S. in the South and the Northeast and the, you know, those kinds of things. I would say I'm hypothesizing, or an organizational culture where you have just sort of a set of norms that people tend to get in trouble.
So environmental.
Values, beliefs, rules, ways of looking at the world, where there's a sort of a center of gravity where, although there's all that on the bell curve, the extremes, there's a center of gravity where you say, well, there's a good chunk of this group that have these values, beliefs, and look at the world or look at the company or look at whatever it is in a certain way, and that would be considered that group's culture.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So part of the idea would be that because change is happening so fast that you have, you know, when I remember when I was like in college, there was this notion of the whatever they called it, you know, the gap between our generation and our parents' generation.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's like, oh, it's been cut much more finely. It's like, well, it doesn't take so long to have a gap. And I think that's because, you know, everything's changing so rapidly, then the environment that people grow up in is different, you know, every chunk of time, that you can get the equivalent of different subcultures. You know, this is, I don't know, this is just one way of thinking about it, but that's kind of how I tend to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Brian, when you first asked that, my first thought was, oh, well, certainly the Gen Y and you know, Gen X, they're more into working in teams. They're wanting more collaboration. They're not so keen on authority or an authoritative leader. But as soon as I had that thought, I had a countervailing thought and could think of examples of members of that those generations who also are very focused on individual accomplishment and rewards and achievement, and very much want to be told in a structured way what to do and what they're accountable for, and please don't make me show up at lots of team meetings, et cetera.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I guess that's where I was coming from, that I think there is this great divide between the generations and how they show up and what they prefer in the workplace.
Yeah.
But I guess I was just, I mean, people are people. And no matter how old they are, and to Bill's point earlier, you know, personal preferences and personality and all of that cuts across all ages. I was just wondering if there was any research on it or any findings or who might be talking about this, especially as it relates to this instrument. Yeah.
Well, I think it's a great question, and I mean, if anybody on the call has seen some, is anybody on the call aware of any research?
I'm still here.
Yeah.
No, no research on it other than it's instead of not on the LA360, but if you read a lot of Ken Wilber's research, it's on how our, say, the U.S. culture or the world cultures and all the, and how what used to take 100 years for that big cultural shift then took 50 years, then it took 20 years. And now there seems to be shifts within a very, very short period of time. There are major shifts in the way the whole, the general group looks at things. So I think that would apply. It's happening certainly when I see it in the business world. If you look at the conscious mind of the business world today and the green and all the other aspects they're taking into account, where 40 years ago that was irrelevant.
Well, it would be, so it would be great if, I mean, Jerry, if you're any aware of any actual research that's underlying that.
I'll certainly add it to the
anyone, I just want to invite anybody on the call, if you, it's such a fascinating topic. I mean, it's certainly the differences between the generations are very real. The question, I think, is about the correlation with stages or agility levels. So
With or without research, I think we can pretty much agree, regardless, evolution or people can move through stages no matter where they are or what they are or what culture they're in or that doesn't change the basic hypothesis of your program, which is there can be improvements. There's always growth, evolution, whatever you want to call it, and whether there's research on it or not, it doesn't matter. It's still evolving anyway.
If anybody does come across research, please post it on the group site.
Yeah.
Or make a reference to it, or make a link that maybe a link you find on the internet or something.
Yeah.
Right.
Were
you
going to
say something else?
Well, this conversation, Ingrid, makes me. My hypothesis would be that the younger generation, they will respond. That if you put this kind of leadership in front of them, if you put this kind of challenge in front of them. That they will respond. They're, the simple fact that things are changing faster and faster, they're the ones that are maybe better able to respond. And even if they are showing up with more, Debbie, like you said, a preference for tell me what to do, give me instruction, that's only because of what the chaos that they're experiencing, and they can't see the connections and connect the dots, and they can't see all that. But if you could actually get to them and isolate them and give them the opportunity to see this stuff, that they could create the change almost from a grassroots.
They're used to rapid change, so I think they'd be more open to it, but it's sort of like the old dog, new tricks kind of a metaphor.
Yeah. Yeah, that they would if you present this effectively, because I kind of have a passion, although there's so much focus on leadership and executive, that's extremely important and will never change, but at the same time, if we work at the grassroots, that these amazing young individuals are emotionally advanced and intelligent, and if this was presented effectively, that they could create almost the uprising around, well, yes, this is what we need to improve. This is what we need to
Well, we actually have
Occupy organization.
think it was Lisa Hirsch who was teaching this to a group of college students, and maybe some others have as well. And she said they were very excited. They got it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, they really took it in and started reflecting on their own leadership in ways that she thought was amazing.
That's hopeful, isn't it?
It is. It's another whole market segment.
This will be mainstream in the management schools and universities and college courses and whatever. This will just be considered to be basic foundational learning.
Yeah. Yeah, Bill and Debbie, are you into the academia? Are you in there getting this into the college stream?
Who are using it in courses, who are, using in business schools and other mostly graduate level, but some undergraduate level courses.
Well, my buddy Charlie Tweedley, who took the training in Boston with me.
That's right.
Yeah, he is now a actual college professor. So I'm going to call him up and say, what have you done with this?
Yes.
Right.
He's thinking about that question, so that was a good time to call him. Yeah.
Actually, you can nudge him because he was going to be reaching out to other faculty and just sharing curriculum ideas.
Well, as a coach, then I will, or as a coach client, you can be the coach. I will make a commitment to give him a call within the next day or two, and nudge him on that.
Oh, good.
And as we do in coaching training, so would we, guys, I have to sign off. It's past our time.
It's time.
Yes.
But I did want to say it was really, really valuable, very, very useful, and that maybe the best learning I got was to back off a little bit on this, 360, and go more into developmental progressions and whatever, and the 360 being the major instrument, but that's not the focus of how I get people excited and interested in this. It's the
low vision. Well, that's a very interesting insight. So, we should be signing off now, and I want to put in a plea to everybody to just let us know your comments, your questions for future telegatherings, and let's keep the conversation going and use the group site.
And one quick question. I'm on the group site, and I keep looking for those. You said past conferences were recorded, but I'm in the files,
There are two of them.
If you go into the filing cabinet, it's
now, where do I file filing cabinet? I'm in what's called files, and my last one is October 22nd, 2010.
Well, in the file cabinet, you should see a set of numbered folders.
Where do I file file cabinet? Under files, all right. I click on files.
Look under, there's a share tab, and under the share tab is file cabinet.
Okay, I guess I must be in the wrong part of the site. Okay, I won't take your time on that, but
we can email or we can talk about this.
Okay.
But there is a specific folder that has the telegathering recordings in it.
Okay.
It's labeled.
You know what? Well, this is making me think. Irene will be sending out a notice to everybody when we know this is recorded, and we'll ask her to give instructions specifically how to get to them.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And thank you, Bill and Debbie. So I'll say good night, and
thank everybody else for being on.
I really appreciate the comments. It was really
right. We'll be doing this again in 6 to 8 weeks, so we'll stay tuned for that announcement.
Great.
Okay, thanks.
Yeah, thank you
all
for joining
you
us. Good night.
Bye-bye.
It was a great conversation.
Right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.